we're going to have to rebuild within this wild, wild west of information flow some sort of curating function.
It's time for the Access of Easy podcast, the weekly technology digest that keeps you ahead of the curve.
We've got to maybe do something with the internet.
Brought to you by EasyDNS.com.
Somebody will say, oh, freedom of speech, freedom of speech. These are foolish people.
The U.S. Justice Department is poised to hit Google with an antitrust lawsuit. Human behavior during the pandemic is messing up models generated by AIs. Facebook is going to head a lobby group to push big tech as essential to the free speech narrative, and announcing free Jitsi-based video conferencing right here. Hello, everybody. Mark Jeftovic here with another edition of Access of Easy. This is episode 146, which means the show notes for this episode will be at accessofeasy.com/146. And let's get down with the quotes. Last week's quote was, "The aim of practical politics is to keep the populace alarmed and hence clamorous to be led to safety by an endless series of hobgoblins, most of them imaginary." That was H.L. Mencken, and the winner was Rob Brunk. This week's quote is, "The press is the hired agent of a moneyed system and set up for no other purpose than to tell lies where their interests are involved." Remember the rules, no searching it up online, and the first person to post the correct answer to the show notes page gets their next domain or web hosting renewal on us. Okay, so the Wall Street Journal reports that the U.S. Justice Department is poised to hit Google with an antitrust lawsuit. Last June, they broke the story that the DOJ was preparing to launch this suit. They had launched an investigation into Google. We covered that in Access of Easy number 100. So now it looks like they're getting ready to file the actual suit. It's going to be the biggest antitrust action since the case against Microsoft about 20 years ago, and several U.S. states are gearing up to join them. Quote, "Much of the state's investigation has focused on Google's online advertising business. The company owns the dominant tool at every link in the complex chain between online publishers and advertisers. The Justice Department likewise is making Google's ad technology one of its points of emphasis, but it is also focusing more broadly on concerns that Google uses its dominant search business to stifle competition," people familiar with the matter said. End quote. And critics are calling for actions that range from restrictions on how the company does business to an outright breakup of the company. Facebook heads lobby group to push big tech as essential to free speech. So Silicon Valley is gearing up for a fight with regulators, and Facebook is taking a leading role in the formation of a new lobbying effort to spin the narrative in big tech's favor. It's called American Edge, and the group hasn't launched yet. Quote, "It argues that Silicon Valley is essential for the U.S. economy and the future of free speech. The group's splash page, which went live on Tuesday night, defines the project as a newly formed bipartisan coalition dedicated to the proposition that American innovators are an essential part of the U.S. economic health, national security, and individual freedoms." End quote. Okay, hold that thought. YouTube deplatforms anti-lockdown epidemiologist and the Bitcoin halving ceremony. So, over the course of the coronavirus pandemic, big tech platforms have been particularly aggressive in deplatforming any content that does not conform to the official narrative. YouTube even defines this in particular as saying anything that does not reflect World Health Organization or CDC directives can be taken down as misinformation. So it was no surprise to learn that YouTube's latest hit was on the controversial epidemiologist and help me pronounce this, Knut Witkowski. He had a video on YouTube with over 1.3 million views. He was criticizing the lockdown and advocating for a herd immunity approach. And of course, YouTube took that down. But guess what else they took down? The Bitcoin halving ceremony. I am not kidding. YouTube deplatformed Cointelegraph's live streaming of the Bitcoin halving ceremony while it was in progress. Quote, Cointelegraph had a full day of programming lined up for a live stream that covered Bitcoin's third block halving on May 11. The agenda mostly went off without a hitch. Fintech luminaries like Tim Draper, Roger Ver, Meltem Demirs, and many more shared their time and opinions with Cointelegraph editorial staff over the course of a live stream that lasted just under 7 hours. But the stream was blocked and deleted 6 hours and 42 minutes into a nearly finished program, locking more than 2,000 viewers out of our coverage. End quote. So, yeah, big tech essential to free speech, my ass. Anyway, on a similar note, we're now announcing free Jitsi-based video conferencing. So last week we launched a free video conferencing service based on Jitsi, which is open source. It's dead easy to use. You simply point your web browser at the system, pick a name for your channel, send that URL to your attendees, and that's it. So go to the link in the show notes page. You get the URL to access the free level. And over the coming weeks, we're going to be releasing a premium version for your business that gets you your own dedicated virtual appliance with the cost. It's going to be on par with like Zoom or WebEx account. French law to remove hate speech within 24 hours passes in the Senate. So I thought I reported on this back when the legislation was first introduced, but I can't find it. In any case, France's lower parliament has passed new laws against hate speech that requires tech platforms to remove such content from their systems within 24 hours of it being flagged. In some extreme cases, such as terrorism and child pornography, within 1 hour. Tech platforms who fail to comply will face significant fines on a per-incident basis, starting at hundreds of thousands of euros and can go as high as 4% of total annual global revenue. Critics worry that the tech platforms may err on the side of caution and simply take everything down without appropriate view just to remain on side of the new rules. I also think that this will unfairly impact smaller and independent challenger platforms, because if one of them gets hit with a single fine, it could put them out of business, while the big incumbents can just write a check or they have the resources to challenge these things in court. Okay, gaming Google to suppress unfavorable results with DMCA requests. So this has been known for years, but the Wall Street Journal wrote this up recently. People can use DMCA and copyright takedown requests to remove search engine results that link to unflattering or controversial pages on the internet. Quote, the journal identified hundreds of instances in which individuals or companies, often using apparently fake identities, caused the Alphabet Inc. unit to remove links to unfavorable articles and blog posts that alleged wrongdoing by convicted criminals, foreign officials, and business people in the U.S. and abroad. End quote. So after the Wall Street Journal showed Google their findings, the company undertook an internal review and they restored over 52,000 links that had previously been removed. You can also gain a lot of visibility into who's requesting DMCA type takedowns by searching on the Lumen database. We've got that on the show notes page, and you just search up domains and you can see who's been requesting takedowns of what. The MIT Technology Review laments that rapid human behavioral changes in terms of what they started buying online during the pandemic is confusing the AI systems behind the scenes that manage inventories and logistics. Quote, this is causing hiccups for the algorithms that run behind the scenes in inventory management, fraud detection, marketing, and more. Machine learning models trained on normal human behavior are now finding that normal has changed and some are no longer working as they should. So I find this article somewhat typical of the world we live in. We kind of create this blind faith in AI, which doesn't actually exist. We use it to create models, which we then stake decisions on, like our supply chains, and then we act very perplexed when reality intervenes and does not conform to the models. Also, I didn't get it into the newsletter, the email version, but this morning I read a really good article on Ben Hunt's Epsilon Theory, where he talks about models, and it's called A Truth Told with Bad Intent. I would look that up and check it out. This also, this is the same phenomena that we covered about a week ago when we looked at the computer model, the Imperial College computer model that helped bring about the global lockdown, and it turns out that a code review of that model was highly flawed. And we link to that in the show notes page as well. The U.S. Senate fell short of adding an amendment to the USA Freedom Reauthorization Act. That's basically just the new name for the Patriot Act. And it would have outlawed warrantless secret searches of Americans' browser and search histories. It was a bipartisan amendment that was part of an effort advanced by Senators Ron Wyden, Democratic Oregon, and Senator Steve Daines, Republican from Montana, to rein in the surveillance powers of the state. It failed by a single vote, and the article notes that Bernie Sanders missed the session and the vote. NSO Group pitched phone hacking service to U.S. police forces. So just last week, we talked about the NSO Group. They had won an Israeli government contract to maintain a database of coronavirus contact traces, and of course, they left one of the servers out in the open, unprotected, for someone like Bob Dianchenko to find, as he is known to do. And we mentioned that they show up in Axis of Easy all the time. They have that spyware called Phantom and Pegasus that they sell to governments who use it to hack dissidents' and journalists' mobile phones. It looks like NSO has been pitching US police departments the same software. Vice magazine published an account based on an NSO source who they're keeping anonymous. They obtained a sales brochure that describes how Phantom can overcome encryption, SSL, proprietary protocols, and any hurdle introduced by complex communications world, including so-called zero-click attacks. That means the attacker, the government who's buying the spyware, needs no interaction with the victim in order to infect their device. How Grubhub and DoorDash, by the way, front run direct calls to restaurants. So Grubhub's running a variation of their domain squatting playbook that we reported on back in Axis of Easy 103. That's the one where they scoop up variations of their client restaurants' domains in order to crowd them out of the organic search engine results. When the prospects search for the restaurant directly, they unwittingly follow one of these typo squat domains. Grubhub snags the order and thus inserts their cut away from a transaction the restaurant would have otherwise kept 100% of. So now they're doing the same thing for telephone numbers. For a restaurant to be in the Grubhub system, they have to use a phone number assigned to them by Grubhub, and that forwards to their regular number. Grubhub manages to get their assigned phone number to show up in the search results, including the Google info panel for that restaurant. And then, since the order is taken via the Grubhub number, incur a service fee that's based on the restaurant's average order size. This even results in restaurants losing money on small orders when they get phoned in. While I was getting ready to send out the email version, I came across another article about pizza arbitrage on DoorDash. That's when an options trader figured out how his friend, who owned a few pizzerias, could make an extra and riskless $10 a pizza by ordering them from his own restaurant via DoorDash, who had taken it upon themselves to advertise in Google for delivery for his restaurants. This is a fascinating article. This guy didn't even offer delivery from his restaurants. He wanted to incentivize diners to come into his dining room, and DoorDash just basically started putting up ads offering delivery from the guy's pizzas. And not only that, they were undercutting him. He charges $24 a pizza. DoorDash was selling them to people for $16 a pizza. They were buying them from him for $24. So this guy started ordering his own pizzas via DoorDash and making an extra $10 a pizza just on the arbitrage. It's crazy. It's Silicon Valley at its finest. That's just kind of the way these unicorns seem to think business should be run. DoorDash also does the domain typo squatting thing that Grubhub does. It's really, I don't even get me started. Okay, so this week on the Access of Easy, the podcast is going pretty well. If you like the podcast, please do leave a review on your favorite platform. We're on Stitcher, Spotify, and iTunes. The salons are doing really well. That's with Charles Hugh Smith, Jesse Hirsch, and myself. We discuss the issues of the day in sort of a long-form discussion, usually about an hour. The most recent episode, which was number 4, was what comes next after the failure of neoliberalism. Also, this week on Access of Easy, Jesse looked at collaboration versus espionage in a pandemic, as well as Ghost, the headless publishing platform. And Charles expanded on what we talked about in the salon with his Globalization and Financialization Are Dead. And he also wrote another piece on why he's not holding his breath for a rebound in consumer spending post-crisis. So that's it for this week. The show notes, once again, are at accessofeasy.com/146. And again, help us get the word out on the accessofeasy.com website and the podcast. And I appreciate everyone who's helped us out so far. Stay sane, stay safe, stay healthy, and we'll see y'all next week. Fire, that's